Riding the Second Wave. Welcome to this audio issue of Distressed Investing, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company. All rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. A COVID-era darling that is repositioned for profitability. This fitness outfit cut the fat and profits up a heap, but even after all of that, the stock is too darn cheap. Martin Fridson, if you ride the perfect wave and don't capture it on video, then the ride didn't happen. In 2002, surfer and entrepreneur Nick Woodman was having an epic day on a surf trip in Australia. If only he could share it with friends, he thought. He wanted an up-close, high-quality photo of himself riding the waves, but there was no consumer-friendly camera that could withstand the ocean's elements. Only a professional photographer could get the shots, but that was expensive, cumbersome, and out of a surfer's control. Woodman, in his early 20s and fresh off two failed startups, decided to solve the problem himself. He returned home, moved back in with his parents, and began his relentless pursuit to create a video camera that would do what he envisioned. He spent long days tinkering in his room, using a drill press and sewing machine to fashion prototypes. He initially envisioned a wrist strap for a 35mm disposable camera. His mission was for people to go professional with their photos, capturing action shots that previously required expensive professional equipment and expertise. He called it a GoPro. The initial funds for his venture came from an unlikely source, selling beaded belts and seashell necklaces out of his 1982 Volkswagen bus along the California coast. The first GoPro, the Hero 35mm, was a success, a simple, rugged camera that attached to a user's wrist. But the true revolution came in 2006 with the digital HERO camera, capable of recording 10-second video clips. Woodman wasn't just selling a camera, he was selling an identity and a platform for self-expression. He intuitively understood that the true value of the camera wasn't just the device, but the content it generated. Early adopters, surfers, skaters, skiers, and adrenaline junkies became the company's best marketers, sharing breathtaking, first-person footage that went viral on the nascent YouTube platform. GoPro's growth was explosive. The company perfectly timed the rise of social media and the democratization of content creation. By 2012, with the launch of the Hero 3, the cameras were smaller, more powerful, and could shoot professional quality video. The company's revenue soared, hitting $985 million in 2013. When Woodman rang the bell for GoPro's initial public offering, IPO, in 2014, shares opened at $24, quickly rising to over $86 a few months later, valuing the company at nearly $11 billion. The rags-to-riches story of a surfer becoming a tech billionaire cemented Woodman as a Silicon Valley icon. But the peak was fleeting. The company, like many fast-growing hardware firms, struggled to maintain its blistering pace. The core issue was the one-trick pony problem. People bought a GoPro for a specific trip or event, but the replacement cycle was slow. Worse, the smartphone was rapidly improving, adding durability and video quality that began to encroach on GoPro's territory. Woodman's response was a classic case of chasing growth at any cost. He expanded into software, media, and a massive, ambitious project, drones. The Karma drone, launched in 2016, was meant to be the company's next billion-dollar product. Instead, it was a debacle. A software glitch caused the drones to fall out of the sky, forcing a massive, embarrassing recall just weeks after launch. That same year, the Hero 5 camera sales were disappointing, and the media division, which was supposed to turn user content into a revenue stream, never materialized. Revenue plummeted, the company posted massive losses, and the stock crashed, eventually falling below $5 a share. Facing bankruptcy, Woodman had to make painful, drastic cuts. He scrapped the media arm, laid off hundreds of employees, and shut down internal divisions. He stopped chasing the dream of becoming a content company and returned to the core, capital-efficient business, making the best, most durable action cameras. The recovery was slow and steady. Woodman learned to focus on profitable sales over unit volume, leaning into the high-end market where smartphones still couldn't compete. The key was the subscription model, GoPro's Quick App, which offered unlimited cloud storage and editing tools. This generated recurring revenue, provided a direct relationship with the customer, and stabilized the business. By 2020, GoPro had its first profitable holiday quarter in years. The company had cut the fat, focused on its niche, and built a sustainable, smaller but smarter business model. The surfer who loved capturing the perfect wave had finally gotten his ride. The story of Nick Woodman and GoPro is similar to that of the company whose stock we are re-recommending this month. It's a boom and bust story with a passionate founder and a loyal following, which has now found its feet once again and is on a nice path of profitability. Going back for seconds, value first drew us into a Peloton Interactive, NASDAQ, P10, bond offering, and then later into its stock. At the time, we saw the beginning of a turnaround for the online fitness company, which makes internet-connected exercise equipment that streams its live and recorded classes. We believed that the company, a former market darling fallen on hard times, could regain at least some of its old luster. In October 2023, we recommended Peloton's 0% convertible bonds maturing February 15, 2026. At the time, the company was struggling mightily. It registered an operating loss of $415 million for the year that ended June 30, 2023. It was a money-losing business with $814 million in cash and $1.7 billion in debt owed to its bondholders and banks. This equated to an infinite valuation multiple. A lot has changed since then. New management ended Peloton's growth at any cost strategy and made deep cuts in marketing, research and development, R&D, and corporate expenses. It opted for a capital-light strategy by closing its factories and outsourcing the manufacture of its bicycles and treadmills. We believe the company was on the right track. In June 2024, we recommended topping off the bond position with Peloton stock, then trading at $3.58 per share. The topping off strategy that we have followed numerous times in distressed investing consists of buying shares in a distressed company after its bonds have begun to improve, like when a waitress tops off your coffee for no charge at the local diner. It's common for the equity market to catch on to a business turnaround months after the price of the bond has moved up. What we noticed is that even though its sales were declining modestly, Peloton generated an operating profit of $4 million in the year that ended June 30, 2024, compared with an operating loss of $209 million in the prior year. Peloton's operating results continued to improve in the quarters that followed, and its stock price more than doubled to $8.90 per share by early November 2024. At that point, we recommended selling half the stock position, which recovered the investment in all the shares, plus a 24% profit. We suggested holding the remaining free shares for the duration. Operations continued to improve. Peloton reported an operating profit of $256 million in the year that ended June 30, 2025, its first profitable quarter since 2021 and its largest ever. The company has continued to cut costs, especially in its marketing budget. Even with declining revenue, the company is on track to book a record operating profit of $450 million to $500 million in the current fiscal year that will end June 30, 2026. Despite this significant progress, steadily increasing operating profit quarter by quarter, Peloton's share price has fallen by roughly half over the last year. It is now trading at $3.77, despite record profitability. As we'll discuss, we believe shares now trade at a bargain price that doesn't reflect the value of the company's brand. Though Peloton's stock is volatile and speculative, we see the risk/reward profile at current prices as very favorable. Peloton's origin story, given his high-powered position as president of commerce at the giant bookseller Barnes & Noble and his role as husband and father to a young family, John Foley was busy. He would relax by taking spin classes at a fitness studio, intense 45-minute workouts on a stationary bike intended to improve heart health and body strength. But given his unpredictable schedule, Foley couldn't sign up in advance for classes, and so there were often no spots left when he wanted to exercise. In his frustration, Foley, shown below in the Wall Street Journal in 2018, imagined a spin bicycle with a tablet computer attached to the handlebars. He wondered if there might be some way to stream spin classes to the internet-connected bicycle. This would get around the enrollment limitation, and it would also reduce the precious time spent going to and returning from the spin studio. It would be a godsend to busy people like himself who were looking to work cardiovascular exercise into their rare and unpredictable blocks of free time. He shared his out-of-the-box idea with some of his colleagues at Barnes & Noble. In April 2012, four of them joined him in founding what they called Peloton Interactive, initially crowdsourcing $317,000 on the social media funding site Kickstarter. They built a spinning studio and broadcast classes to everyone who owned a Peloton bicycle, which they originally sold for $1,500. The business grew rapidly in the years that followed. The founders took the company public in September 2019, raising $1.2 billion at $29 per share. This equated to a whole company valuation of $8.1 billion. Today, Peloton's market cap is just under $2 billion. 6 months later, in March 2020, the pandemic hit, causing gyms around the world to close. Suddenly, the only place to work out was at home. Demand for Peloton's connected spin bike surged, and the waiting list grew. Peloton's online instructors became celebrities. By December 2020, shares of Peloton hit their all-time high of $162.72. At this point, the market was valuing the business at more than $45 billion, a nearly 6x increase in just over a year. In response to the pandemic-induced demand, co-founder and CEO Foley spent lavishly to increase Peloton's manufacturing capacity. Peloton purchased Precor, a maker of traditional gym equipment, for $420 million, simply to gain control of its 50,000 square feet of factory space. In early 2021, when there were already signs that the demand bubble was subsiding, the company broke ground on a $400 million project called Peloton Output Park, which would build 1 million square feet of manufacturing capacity, equating to more than 17 football fields. Foley and his management team made the critical mistake of believing their own publicity. They thought that Peloton was destined to become a trillion-dollar business. Of course, it didn't become a trillion-dollar business. The company, which generated an operating profit of $114 million in 2020 and $58 million in 2021, lost almost $1.9 billion in 2022 and more than $800 million in 2023. After the shutdown caused by the pandemic eased, demand for Peloton bikes slowed and the price of Peloton stock began to plummet. From June 1, 2021, through June 1, 2022, the share price sank 89% from $125 to $14. Founder Foley went from shareholder hero to enemy number one. The change became apparent in January 2021, before much of the share price decline. Activist investor John Aintabi, the CEO of Blackwell's Capital, which owned 5% of Peloton stock, lobbied the company's board to fire Foley for mismanagement. He also called for a sale of the company. 2 weeks later, Blackwell's released a 65-page public call to action. In addition to enumerating why Peloton needed to fire CEO Foley, it listed the companies Aintabi believed would have a sound business rationale for acquiring Peloton. Among the names he listed were Apple, AAPL, Amazon, AMZN, Netflix, NFLX, and Nike, NKE. Peloton would be a bite-sized morsel for any of these large businesses. Foley resigned from Peloton in February 2022. He was succeeded by Barry McCarthy, who had been CFO of Netflix and Spotify Technology, SPOT, two of the largest subscription-based entertainment companies. A sea change, it was time to see what had gone wrong. Foley's strategy of growth at any cost had made Peloton extremely capital inefficient. In addition to selling equipment and subscriptions to classes, it was manufacturing its own equipment and selling it in the company's own stores. This strategy did build brand awareness. Unfortunately, it also burned through a lot of capital and raised the specter of bankruptcy. New CEO McCarthy closed the company's money-losing factories and outsourced the production of its connected fitness equipment. He also closed the Peloton stores, some immediately, others when their leases ended. As of December 31, 2025, the company had closed 71 of 86 stores, with the balance due to close by June 30. On the revenue side, McCarthy focused on building Peloton's high-margin subscription service, which provided a broad array of classes for its spin bicycle subscribers and eventually for those who purchased its treadmills and rowing machines. The company has recently opened 10 microstores, a fraction of the size of the previous showrooms, and expanded its distribution with third-party sellers like Dick's Sporting Goods and Amazon. McCarthy also focused on cutting overhead, especially marketing expenses, which continues still. Taken together, these steps have enabled the company to generate free cash flow, pay down debt, and eliminate fears about Peloton solvency. The operating losses shrank from $983 million in the year that ended June 30, 2022, to a loss of $209 million in 2023 and an operating profit of $3.5 million in 2024. While he was successful in cutting costs and greatly improving profits, McCarthy was not able to increase revenue. In May 2024, he resigned as CEO. In October 2024, the Peloton board announced that Peter Stern would replace McCarthy as CEO. Stern had built subscription businesses at Ford Motor, Apple Fitness, and Time Warner Home Security. When Stern began, the company had committed to a plan to cut $200 million in operating expenses. Stern has followed through on cutting costs and the company achieved its target of $200 million in cost savings by June 30, 2025. Becoming a wellness company. Now Stern is taking steps to change Peloton's focus from fitness to broader concept of wellness. The Peloton mission is now to tap into the megatrend of increasing health span, which is not just extending the number of years you live but doing so in good health. The consulting firm McKinsey & Company estimated the global wellness market at $6.8 trillion in 2024. It expects this market for wellness to grow 7.6% annually and approach $10 trillion by 2029. Cross-training, tracking, and personalization. As part of its evolution into a wellness company, on October 1, 2025, Peloton introduced its Peloton cross-training series of upgraded connected fitness equipment. Cross-training, which consists of switching from one form of strength exercise to another, is a popular trend. For Peloton, it specifically refers to the new fully swiveling screen, which makes it possible to combine on equipment, a spin cycle, and off-equipment workouts, on an exercise mat, for example. At the same time, the company introduced Peloton IQ, an AI-based coach that tracks, motivates, and personalizes an individual's workout, all of which are important to Gen Zers, ages 15 to 30, and Gen Alphas, 15 and under, according to McKinsey. Peloton's Bike Plus, Tread Plus, and Row Plus models, detailed below, have a movement tracking camera, which permits the coach to observe the workout and track the number of reps and other metrics. Peloton IQ can also customize workouts to fit into the individual's available amount of time and energy levels, and make suggestions for maximizing the workout's effectiveness. Peloton IQ creates a complete fitness studio by unifying cardio, strength training, yoga and meditation, and personalized guidance. For example, the new equipment makes it simple to switch from a cardio class on equipment to a guided strength session standing up or on a mat. It provides weekly workout summaries and recommendations. Equipment and subscriptions. Peloton has five types of connected fitness equipment. The company sells them at list price and periodically offers them at a discount of 10% to 15% for short periods. Bike Peloton's original offering lists for $1,695. Bike Plus, the bike but with a larger screen, better sound, and more cushioned seat, it lists for $2,695. Tread Peloton's basic treadmill lists for $3,295. Tread Plus, the tread but with a cushioned rotating belt, a more comfortable seat, a bigger screen, and premium sounds, its list price is $6,695. Row Peloton's rowing machine lists for $3,495. When Peloton introduced its cross-training series, it also raised the prices on its subscription packages. Those different levels are: All Access Membership, Peloton's most popular offering, allows unlimited use of Peloton's live and recorded classes. Its price increased from $44 to $49.95 per month. App Plus, this app-based subscription provides access to most live and recorded classes, but cannot be connected to Peloton equipment. Its price increased from $24.99 to $28.99 per month. This more limited app-based subscription provides access to some recorded classes and up to 3 live classes per month. Its price increased from $12.99 to $15.99 per month. Where fitness meets social media, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it is to become a Peloton fitness class trainer. The job requires physical expertise, the ability to teach and to project great excitement, sex appeal, and a high level of social media savvy. Peloton has had a prominent social media presence from the start, and currently boasts over 3.3 million social followers, principally on Facebook and Instagram. While Peloton customers enjoy their equipment, it's the live and recorded classes that maintain loyalty. Most people who work out regularly have their own go-to trainers. The most popular trainers are celebrities inside the Peloton universe, sometimes outside of it as well. Top trainers, shown below, include Cody Rigsby, Alex Toussaint, Robin Arzon, Olivia Amato, Tonda Oinyan, and Jess Sims. These and others are recognized for motivating, intense, and often pop music-driven fitness sessions, frequently appearing in top instructor ranking. Peloton's classes have expanded from cardio fitness, spinning, running, and rowing, to a wide range of activities popular in cross-training, strength, yoga, meditation, stretching, and boot camp. Peloton's competition. Peloton is the largest player in at-home fitness, with a commanding 50% market share in 2024. Its competitors include Mirror, Nordic Track, Tonal, and Bowflex. Even more impressive, according to a May 2024 company presentation, Peloton has a 74% market share of connected fitness subscriptions, far ahead of its nearest competitor, iFit, with a 13% market share. Measuring brand power, with net promoter scores. A common way to assess the strength of a brand is to calculate a net promoter score, NPS, which calculates the percentage of customers who would recommend a particular product or service and subtracts from it the percentage of customers who would not recommend it. The NPS runs from minus 100, meaning everybody hates it, to plus 100, meaning everybody loves it. An NPS of 50 or higher is considered excellent, and a score of 70 or higher is considered world-class. As of December 31, 2024, Peloton's Bike, Bike Plus, Tread, and Tread Plus all had an NPS above 70. Peloton's Tread leads the pack with an 80 NPS. We believe Peloton's strong brand association is an integral part of the company's value and makes the franchise attractive to potential acquirers. Capital structure. Peloton's capital structure as of December 31, 2025, reflects the completion of a successful refinancing. In May 2024, the company paid off its old bank debt with proceeds from new bank loans due May 30, 2026, and a $345 million issuance of 5.5% convertible bonds. It also repaid the $209 million in 0% bonds on February 15. We recommended buying this bond in October 2023 for $740, and it matured last month for a 34.6% gain. Peloton now has $1.29 billion in debt and $971 million in cash. We believe that even this modest amount of debt is overstated. The $345 million of 5.5% bonds due December 1, 2029, are convertible into common stock at $4.58 per share. If Peloton's share price increases to that level before then, which we believe it will, these bonds will be converted into 76 million shares. This would increase Peloton's shares count from 432 million to 508 million. Financial statements. Under CEO Peter Stern, Peloton is continuing to cut overhead expenses, which has led operating profit to increase even with declining revenue. For the year that ended June 30, 2025, sales and marketing expenses declined 28%, R&D cost 20%, and administrative 33%. The company also reduced capital expenditure in the year that ended June 30 from $19.7 million the year before to $9.3 million, and from $82.4 million 2 years prior. For the 6 months that ended December 31, connected fitness revenue declined 4% and subscription revenue fell 4.3%. Direct costs fell 3.7% for connected fitness and by 11.6% for the subscription business. Total overhead, sales and marketing, administrative, and research and development, was 9% lower than for the same period last year. Putting it all together, operating profit rose 14.6% to $199 million. For the 12 months ending December 31, operating profit was $429 million. As a result of these actions, Peloton generated $333 million in cash flow from operations for the year that ended June 30, an improvement of nearly $400 million from the outflow of $66 million the year before. Peloton used this cash to reduce its debt by $343 million during the year. Peloton has become a more efficient company that now generates substantial operating profit and consistent free cash flow. But even though overhead costs have declined from 65% of revenue in 2022 to 46% in the 12 months ended December 31, we note that on average overhead as a percentage of revenue for Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Nike is 23%, half what it is for Peloton. Value of Peloton to a corporate buyer. Given the greater and more efficient scale of these companies, any one of them should be able to reduce Peloton's overhead as percentage of sales considerably. Based on Peloton's revenue of $2.4 billion for the 12 months that ended December 31, each percentage point of savings increases operating profit by $24 million. For example, if a buyer such as the one cited above could cut Peloton's overhead from 46% to 36% of revenue, still well above the large company average, it would increase Peloton's operating profit by $240 million. This efficiency would be magnified if Peloton revenue were to increase given these companies' large customer bases. For example, Peloton has roughly 2.7 million paying subscribers. Apple currently has over 1.3 billion active iPhone users worldwide. Peloton's lack of growth, in fact, declining revenue, may prove to be a blessing in disguise if it forces a discussion of the reality that Peloton would be worth more as part of a larger company. The longer the company's share price remains depressed, the more likely it is that an activist shareholder, whether John Aintabi at Blackwell's or someone else, will push for a sale of the company. When two businesses combine, the benefits that come from the combination are typically shared, to one degree or another, by both sides. Sellers are generally advised by sophisticated bankers and lawyers who work to maximize their clients' leverage in the negotiation. For this exercise, we assume that a buyer would credit Peloton some of the reduction in overhead and would keep the upside from future growth. If we reduce Peloton's overhead as a percentage of sales by 5 to 10 percentage points, from the current 46% to between 36% and 41%, its operating profit for the current year would rise, as discussed above, by $120 million to $240 million. We add this increment amount to the $475 million in operating profit, the midpoint of $450 million to $500 million, projected for the year ending June 30, 2026. This results in a pro forma operating profit of $595 million to $715 million. Let's use the lower half of the range and assume $600 million to $650 million in operating profit. We apply multiples of 6x to 9x, though Peloton has often traded at a multiple of 10x or more, and this yields valuations of $7.15 to $11.58 per share. Even the low end of this range is 90% above the current stock price of $3.77. We believe it is possible an acquirer could pay more than 9x pro forma operating profit, particularly if more than one company ends up in the negotiations. As a reference, Amazon, Netflix, Apple, and Nike trade at an average of 21x this year's projected operating profit. Buying back shares should provide additional upside, as noted. Peloton is looking to refinance its $945 million bank loan. Management mentioned on the company's most recent conference call that a new loan would provide it with more flexibility. This most likely means permitting Peloton to buy back stock, which has fallen sharply despite record operating profits. We believe that Peloton shares are deeply undervalued, and each share repurchased at the current level will increase the value of the remaining shares. In the chart below, we assume Peloton repurchases between 5% and 20% of stock at an average price of $5 per share. As a hypothetical example to show the benefit of a reduced share count, we assume a buyer would pay $5 billion for Peloton. The green figure indicates the value per Peloton share, assuming 508 million shares. The numbers beneath it show the resulting share price based on the percentage of shares purchased. We reduce the company's cash balance to pay for the repurchases. For example, with the current share count of 508 million shares, if a buyer were to pay $5 billion for Peloton, each share would receive $9.90. If the company were to buy back 5% of its shares, that value would rise to $10.16, and $10.45 and $10.77, assuming repurchases of 10% and 20% respectively. Risks and investment in Peloton Interactive stock is risky. We view these as the most significant, but not the only, risks. Paid subscriptions are declining. For the quarter that ended December 31, total paid subscriptions fell 7% versus the same period in 2024. The company recently increased the subscription price of its All Access membership 11%, which will help maintain the profit from subscriptions for a time. Over the longer term, Peloton will need to increase subscribers to maintain profitability. The company faces considerable direct and indirect competition in the fitness and wellness markets from a wide array of companies. Many of them have greater financial resources than Peloton. While Peloton's connected fitness is currently the market leader, changes in technology might lead to competitive products and/or services that might replicate many of Peloton's features at a lower cost. Peloton's connected fitness equipment and subscriptions are, in effect, luxury goods. Demand could decline meaningfully in the event of increased economic uncertainty or recession. Peloton has undergone frequent management changes since 2021. Over that period, the company has had three CFOs. On February 5, Peloton CFO Liz Coddington announced that she would step down to take a similar job in a different industry. There are no allegations of financial impropriety. Her successor will become the third CFO over the same period. The largest part of Peloton's profit comes from subscriptions to classes that are streamed over the internet. Any breaches of the company's cybersecurity could lead to reputational harm and declining revenues. Action to take: buy Peloton Interactive, NASDAQ, PTEN, up to $4.25 per share. Distressed debt market shrugs off conflict in Iran. The U.S.-Israeli military strikes on Iran that began February 28 had noticeable repercussions in the debt market. For example, the benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury yield, which had dropped from a recent high of 4.29% on January 20 to 3.95% by February 27, shot back up to 4.12% on March 12. Contributing to that move were fears that soaring oil prices would fuel inflation, dashing hopes for further Fed interest rate cuts. But despite the economic dislocations that might result from a prolonged conflict, the distressed debt market was left largely untouched. The number of speculative-grade companies represented in the ICE's Bank of America U.S. High Yield Index, with bonds trading at yield spreads over treasuries of 10 percentage points or more, actually declined from 69 on February 27 to 68 on March 12. Three issuers entered the ranks, while four left. One of the exits was by oilfield equipment company Nine Energy Services. Ironically, it didn't result from a strengthening of the credit in response to the Brent crude oil prices leap from $67 per barrel to $96 per barrel between February 27 and March 12. Instead, the Houston-based business filed for bankruptcy. Its bonds remained in distress by common understanding of that term. But the ICE Bank of America U.S. High Yield Index includes only bonds that are currently paying interest. The index manager therefore removed Nine's 13% bonds due 2028. One of the newly distressed bonds was in the software services sector, which has been a highly publicized trouble spot in the private credit market. A 6% drop in the price of Austin Holdco's 7.125% due 2028 pushed its yield spread over the 10 percentage point threshold. On the whole, though, the distressed debt market's response to the outbreak of hostilities in the Middle East was an expression of indifference. The conflict is a grave matter, but it has not, at least so far, expanded the range of choices for distressed investors. And before we turn to the review of current recommendations, we are rolling out a risk rating scale. Porter Stansberry's Complete Investor, the Porter & Company flagship publication, uses numerical designations 1 to 5 for its risk ratings. These ratings focus mainly on business risk, not the specific investment risk of the recommendation. Since most of the businesses and investments in distressed investing would fall on the riskier, 3 to 5 levels, range, we feel that a more appropriate scale for distressed investing holdings would focus on the specific stock or bond investment and not the business itself. So, going forward, we will use the letter designation scale below for each new recommendation and for all current recommendations. Note that the term non-investment grade in the descriptions below generally refers to the BBB rating or lower issued by the major rating agencies, such as Moody's and S&P Global, but also as a general market designation when a specific agency rating does not exist. Mild risk distress, rated non-investment grade, but possessing financial resources sufficient to make repayment of a near-term debt maturity overwhelmingly likely. This category is not applicable to defaulted bonds. Medium risk distress, rated non-investment grade, but substantially undervalued in light of the strong probability of a favorable future path for the business. In the case of a defaulted bond, the obligation is well secured, pointing to a high recovery compared with the current price. Maximum risk distress, rated non-investment grade, with large price upside but also a significant chance of a business setback and price decline. In the case of a defaulted bond, the debt restructuring could work out either very favorably or very unfavorably for holders. Review of current recommendations. Ford Motors Convertible Bonds, Mature Tomorrow Ford Motors, NYSE, F0% Convertible Bonds, which we recommended in April 2023, mature tomorrow, March 15. Ford shares closed at $12.11 on Thursday, well below the conversion price of $13.26. Because the share price is below the conversion price, investors will receive $1,000 in cash for each Ford bond. AMC tweaks its debt restructuring. On February 23, AMC Entertainment, NYSE, AMC, announced it was issuing $1.73 billion in new bonds that would be secured by the company's assets and would mature in 2031. The company intends to use the proceeds of these bonds, plus a newly arranged $750 million bank loan also maturing in 2031, to pay off its $2 billion bank loan due in January 2029 and $400 million of 12.875% secured bonds due in November 2027. Then on March 6, the company announced that based on market conditions brought on by the U.S. action in Iran, it canceled this bond offering. Instead, AMC announced an agreement for a $425 million bank loan maturing in 2031 to repay its 12.875% bonds. Even with this more limited financing, and the $125 million in 6.125% bonds maturing May 15, 2027, the company has no other significant debt due before January 2029. The company should therefore have a long runway to take advantage of the strong film slates expected this year and in 2027. We continue to recommend shares of AMC Entertainment, now trading at $1.09, up to $4.50. It carries a risk rating of C. Constellation Software increases stake in Sabre on March 2. In response to news of a potential acquisition, the board of travel software company Sabre, NASDAQ, Sabre, approved a one-year shareholder rights plan. In the event that an outside party accumulates 15% of Sabre shares, the company will distribute rights that permit its shareholders to purchase additional shares at 50% of market value. The goal of such an arrangement is to force any potential acquirer to negotiate with management and pay a fair price for the shares. The company indicated it was taking this step because Constellation Software, a large Canadian company that owns other travel-related software businesses, had acquired shares and options that gave it a 9.7% interest in Sabre. On the news, Sabre stock rose nearly 30% to $1.53 per share. Constellation informed Sabre of its ownership in January, when it made a formal request for two seats on Sabre's board of directors. On March 6, the companies announced an agreement providing Constellation with one seat on the Sabre board. We continue to recommend shares of Sabre, currently trading at $1.71 per share, up to $4.50. It carries a risk rating of C despite decline. In safety cushion, Icon holds steady. Icon Enterprises, NASDAQ, IEP, reported its results for the quarter that ended December 31, From September 30, the value of the company's assets after debt declined by $654 million, or 17%, to $3.17 billion. The loss was largely attributable to a $778 million decline in the value of Icahn's holdings in oil refiner CVR Energy. As a reminder, the company and the funds in which it invests use hedges to protect the value of its portfolio against the possibility of a significant decline in stock market averages. While these hedges can help or hurt results in any given quarter, we view them as beneficial for bondholders, who are secured by the Icahn Enterprises assets. We calculate that bondholders' safety cushion, the amount the portfolio could decline before becoming worth less than Icahn Enterprises' total borrowings, fell to 41% from 43% as of September 30. We continue to recommend Icahn Enterprises' 9.75% bonds, current trading at $990, up to a price of $1,020, which would equate to an annual yield of roughly 9%. It carries a risk rating of a market overreacts to Shift 4's 2026 guidance payments processor Shift 4 Payments, NYSE, 4, reported its operating results for the quarter that ended December 31 and provided its outlook for 2026. The market's take on the 2026 outlook is that Shift 4's growth is decelerating, that free cash flow generation is weak, and that the company overpaid to acquire the luxury payment platform Global Blue. Shares of Shift 4 have now fallen 60% since hitting $108 in July, and preferred shares have fallen 50% over the same period. Both share classes are down 25% since we recommended them in January. The principal metric for assessing Shift 4's growth is gross revenue less network fees, GRLNF, measuring the increase in payment processing revenue after fees paid to networks such as Visa, MasterCard, and large banks. During the most recent quarter, this metric increased 51%, while gross profit rose 58%. Company-wide, revenue jumped 23% and operating profit went up 48%. For the year, GRLNF rose 46% and total revenue rose 25%. Shift 4's outlook for 2026 calls for 26% to 31% GRLNF growth to $2.5 billion to $2.6 billion. Management sees mid-single-digit growth in tax-free shopping and low single-digit growth in the subscription and other category. It expects operating income to increase 20% to 25% to approximately $1.2 billion. The market is probably troubled by the fact that Shift 4 expects to generate between $490 million and $510 million in free cash flow in 2026, essentially flat with 2025. We note that the company is installing the systems needed for Global Blue's luxury retailers to subscribe to, and pay for, a wider range of Shift 4 services. There's an inevitable lag between these expenditures, which are happening now, and revenue, which should follow in 12 to 24 months. The company expects adjusted earnings per share of $5.50 to $5.70, up from $5.17 in 2025. At the current price of $44.39, shares of Shift 4 trade at 7.9x current year earnings, a multiple that we believe doesn't reflect the likelihood that over the intermediate term Shift 4's operating profit will resume rising at roughly 30% per year. We note that Jared Isaacman, Shift 4's founder and current NASA administrator, purchased more than 200,000 shares in August at an average price of roughly $83, and he bought $17 million in stock at $44 to $48 per share. It's also positive that he intends to return to Shift 4 after his stint at NASA. Additionally, Isaacman converted his supervoting shares into common stock, so that all shareholders now hold just one class of shares, and forgave roughly $400 million owed to him by Shift 4 under a tax-sharing agreement. The company has been buying back shares and as of December 31, had $500 million in its authorization to repurchase shares in the open market. At current prices, this would equate to reducing the share count by about 9%. In short, we believe that Shift 4's results in 2026 reflect the cost of cross-selling additional services to Global Blue's base of luxury retailers, but not the new benefits that are likely to flow in 2027 and 28, leading to operating profit rising at roughly 30% per year. For this reason, we continue to recommend buying Shift 4 stock up to $70 per share and 6% convertible preferred, currently trading at $56.10, stock up to $88 per share. They both carry a risk rating of BC. Profits to improve for Kronos International for the quarter that ended December 31. Sales for pigment maker Kronos Worldwide, NYSE, KRO, fell 1% to $418 million, and the company generated an operating loss of $57.9 million, compared with an operating profit of $41.7 million in the same period last year. During the quarter, the company reduced its production rate to 55% from 97% to reduce its inventory levels. The reduced production rate, which spreads overhead over fewer tons produced, lowered its operating results by $54 million. Sales declined 1% for the year to $1.86 billion. Adjusting for one-time effects, the company generated an operating profit of $22 million as compared to $188 million in 2024. Management estimates that reduced production rates lowered operating profit in 2025 by $111 million. There are numerous reasons to believe that Kronos's operating results will improve in 2026. A number of Kronos competitors closed plants in China and Europe toward the end of 2025. Kronos instituted cost cuts in the range of $25 million to $50 million in the most recent anti-dumping legislation in Europe and in Brazil, should give producers in the US and Europe a leg up over Chinese competition. Chemours, Tronox, and a variety of Chinese competitors have announced price increases of around 4% over the last few months, and prices have begun to firm up. Kronos management does not host conference calls or provide projections. Given the positive factors described above, we expect that Kronos operating results this year will more than cover its fixed charges, $53 million interest expense, and $40 million to $50 million in capital expenditures. Additionally, the company has an ample liquidity cushion, $33 million in cash and $251 million available on its bank facilities, and no debt maturing before 2029. We continue to recommend shares of Kronos worldwide, currently trading at $4.91 per share, up to a price of $5.25. It carries a risk rating of C. To see the full list of recommendations, click here. Banzai EP 9.75% January 15, 2029 Bond, AXRX 3.75% March 15, 2030 Convertible Bond, C. Merck 5.125% February 1, 2029 Bond, C. Equities Houlihan, Loki, A. Peloton Interactive, C. Sabre, C. AMC, C. JetBlue, BC, Kronos, C. Shift 4BC, Mercer International, C. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hope you enjoyed this audio issue. In addition to this issue, you should check out our top 3 best buys, where we highlight 3 current portfolio picks that are at an attractive buy point today. You can find the top 3 best buys under the Best Buys link on our site at porterandcompanyresearch.com.